Yom HaMeh in the recorder. Okay, so Parshas Maaseh has a lot of very interesting guidelines about our perspective in Eretz Yisrael. And no one would think that they're just learning Torah and they just plunge into Torah and learn it. You think about what Torah means to you, what Torah has meant throughout history, our relationship with Torah, our attitudes to Torah. The same thing with Eretz Yisrael. We can't just say, we're living in Eretz Yisrael, we're back. What does it mean to be in Eretz Yisrael? What has happened historically to Eretz Yisrael? So there are a lot of interesting Rashis that highlight that point. So let's work backwards, because in Perek Lamed Daled, this is in the middle of Sheni, in Perek Lamed Daled, the Torah describes the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Zos haaretz asher tipol lachem b'nachala, eretz kenan l'gvilose. And here we have the actual boundaries of Eretz Yisrael. Now, thank God, we're living in Israel, we know where some of these places are. For thousands of years, people read Parshas Maaseh in London, in Paris, in Moscow, and far away, far removed, and they can only imagine where these landscapes were, where these boundaries were. So what's interesting is, first of all, the word tipo lachem, the land that will fall to you. It's a strange way to describe living in Israel or acquiring Israel, the land that will fall to you. So Rashi gives two ideas. Number one, al shem shenischalka bigorel nikres chaluka lashon afila. Basically, you don't acquire anything cognitively or consciously. You're just involved in a lottery. When you're involved in a lottery, it's luck. You're passive. You don't decide anything. You don't determine anything. People use the expression today, it fell into my lap, it fell into my lot. It means that it's a passive acquisition, because no human being can acquire Eretz Yisrael without HaKadosh Baruch Hu delivering it or enabling it. So it's not just the word, but the word refers to the mechanism of the goral, and the goral itself distills the fact that you're not choosing or picking or selecting Eretz Yisrael, but it's falling to you from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Keep in mind that the word tipol, sure this morning is about 8:40, I'll post it. Keep in mind that the word tipol also suggests a heavenly delivery. When something falls, we assume it falls from a height. Normally, gravity makes something fall from a height. So if Eretz Yisrael falls to me because it emanates in Shemayim, and there's a corresponding Yushalayim Shalmala, connected Yushalayim Shalmata. So Eretz Yisrael falling means, come Benj, Eretz Yisrael falling means that we're discussing the word falling, why Eretz Yisrael falls, because human beings can't acquire it, it has to be given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's why it's distributed through a goral, so it's passive rather than active. And second of all, because it comes from Shemayim, Rashi doesn't say this, but I'm adding that. So that's the first pshat in Rashi. Why, when the land of Israel's boundaries are described, does it say this is the land that should fall to you? It means it should fall to you because you're not acquiring it. No human being can acquire, capture, or conquer. The land has to be delivered passively through a supernatural means of a goral, and it falls from heaven. Then Rashi gives a second shot. Medrash Agada Omer, Ayedei Shehipil HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sareim Shal Shiva Umos Min HaShemayim. Because there were other people living in the land, namely the seven nations, and obviously their presence or absence there is a precondition for the Jewish people to live there, as we'll see soon. And obviously they don't want to leave. And obviously the real battle took place in Shemayim. It wasn't about how many armies the Jewish people sent into the land and how many battalions they could conquer and how many spears they held, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, in Chazal's description, every nation has a Tsar, has a supernatural being in Shemayim that does its bidding. And that Tsar can make requests from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Tsar can defend its constituents, his constituency. And of course, we believe it's true. We just were less attuned to that world because we didn't really live in that world. But in our world, that could be translated not to a Tsar, but to a nation, its forces, its powers, its faculties in a more empirical sense. So the word Hapala means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu defeated all these Tsars, all these supernatural agents or proxies that were there to bid the needs of the various people, the Kaf son of Moshe, and he tied them down in front of Moshe, Amar lo re'e, ein bohem od koach. Namely, before Moshe ever entered the land of Israel, there was a different drama taking place in Shemayim. These nations became failed nations. So when Moshe, supernaturally, so when Moshe entered the land, they were too weak to offend him, too weak to defend the land, and too weak to oppose him. So Zos Haaretz Asher Tipol Lachem doesn't refer to the parcels of land that fell, but to the nations that were falling like dominoes before the Jewish people entered the land of Israel, and they were falling like dominoes, again according to Rashi, because of what was happening in Shemayim, because their proxy was being defeated, was being fallen or felled. So again, we have to interpret this into modern. Of course, there's a Sar, there's these worlds that we can't describe still exist, but for our own world, we have seen over the last couple dozens of years where nations in this vicinity surrounding Eretz Yisrael that pose a threat to the state of Israel. Sadly, we don't celebrate the misery of human beings, but sadly, we're witnessing a lot of failed states. I mean, there are not that many failed states in Europe. Most of the states in Europe have been pretty secure. They may be dysfunctional states, they may be laughable states, God, but they still haven't really failed that much. Even when they reach dramatic crises, economic crises, demographic crises, England's been around for a while, Spain's been around for a while. Yet you're witnessing a lot of instability, specifically in this century, in countries surrounding the land of Israel, and countries that were relatively stable for hundreds of years. Again, I'm using the modern terms, Iraq and Iran and Syria and Lebanon and Egypt and these are Libya, countries that were very stable for hundreds of years. But now history has returned, and now we're living through Masseh again, because for thousands of years the Jews really weren't able to come back to Eretz Yisrael. But now we're walking back to Eretz Yisrael the same way the Moshe walked back. And there are nations that want to oppose us, and we'll talk about some of this opposition later. And again, we don't celebrate when human beings suffer. We don't want human beings to suffer. But inasmuch as some of these states are impeding the restoration of history, which can only happen when the Jewish people return to their land, so they are nations that are falling. Those are the Tipolachem. The Tipolachem doesn't mean the lands of Israel. Tipolachem means the fates of nations that are impeding the Jewish people from entering Eretz Israel, Rashi says. And we're witnessing literally this Rashi being reenacted in front of our eyes. And we hope that Iran, and we assume Iran will follow a similar trajectory, and at some point that tyrannical, totalitarian, terror-spreading regime will fall under the weight of its own evil and the weight of its own terror. But it isn't incidental that the highest rate of fallen states are occurring right in the radius of Eretz Yisrael. Again, we're not happy that people suffer, but inasmuch as necessary for history for some of these states that are impeding the Jewish approach to be dismantled or crippled, we see that there being no fail in the same way that Rashi describes. So that's an interesting Rashi about Asher Tipol Lochem. Now, while we're on this Rashi, the Torah, the first part of the Rashi, Misavis b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta them ki atem b'yim el eretz kenan zos ha'aretz asher tipol lochem b'nachala. So Rashi asks a very interesting question. This is what we call it, and it sounds like a klutz kasha. When Rashi asks the question, you have to ask him, why is he asking the question? Why does the Torah need to deliver the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? Why does the Torah need to deliver boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? What could be more important than the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? So Rashi says, he doesn't ask the question, but he implies the question, because there are a lot of mitzvahs that apply to Eretz Yisrael and don't apply in Chutz La'aretz. And therefore, the Torah has to describe the boundaries to be very precise and very exact, which area is Chayiv and Trumos, which area is Chayiv and Maisos, which area is Chayiv and Shemitah, which area is Kedushas Eretz Yisrael. We need to know. Now, implicit in this Rashi is a very interesting statement, that these are the boundaries and the borders for Eretz Yisrael for halachic purposes. If I ask myself, which has Trumas, which has Maestros, which has Kedusha, here, not beyond. But when I ask myself a larger question, historical and a national question, what are the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael? That's a whole different ballgame. It's a whole different question. Throughout history, for both tragic reasons and triumphant reasons, the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael are going to be movable. They're going to stretch, they're going to expand, they're going to contract. When Am Yisrael suffers, they're going to be, less of Israel will be under Jewish sovereignty. When Am Yisrael triumphs, more of Israel will be under Jewish sovereignty. So when you ask questions today like Eilat, if Eilat's, assuming Eilat is outside of the biblical boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, so maybe there are certain halachos that don't apply to Eilat. But from a historical perspective, now the Jews have settled Eilat and incorporated Eilat as part of the renewed Jewish nation in the modern era, so there's no difference between Eilat and Hebron, even though Hebron has. So Rashi is a very important Rashi. Don't take these boundaries and extrapolate that these are the boundaries of Israel. Israel is a metaphysical, historical entity that shifts with the passage of time and history. These are the boundaries that define where mitzvos, hatzlios, ba'aretz, and narigan. That's where Rashi asks the question. Don't take these boundaries as the be-all and end-all about what defines or doesn't define the land of Israel. Okay, so that's an interesting Rashi. Perhaps one of the most interesting Rashis is in Perek Nun Gimel. Perek Nun Pasuk Nun Gimel. Perek Lamed Gimel. Famous Pasuk. V'horashtem es ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba. Now, what does it mean, v'horashtem? So famously, the Ramban claimed v'horashtem is a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Milashon Yerusha. You should inherit the land. You should settle the land. V'horashtem es ha'aretz v'yishavtem ba. Rashi disagrees with the Ramban. Rashi writes the word v'horashtem means, you take a look, v'horashtem, take a look at the Rashi, v'horashtem osam miyoshveha. You should empty the land of its inhabitants. Not miyoshon Yerusha, but from the language of emptying. Horasha means to empty something. So according to Rashi, there may not be a biblical mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. Many people feel this is the Rambam Shita. The Rambam does not count mitzvahs usual in Eretz Yisrael. Many people feel like he interpreted the pasuk the same way Rashi interpreted the pasuk. Which begs the question, why would the Torah write it this way? Yeah, the Torah is obviously describing living in Eretz Yisrael, whether it's describing it as a mitzvah or it's describing to empty the land. But why would the closest the Torah gets to describing a mitzvah, whether it's a formal mitzvah or not, but when the Torah is telling us to live in Eretz Yisrael, even if it's not a mitzvah, why does it describe it by emptying the inhabitants? So Rashi says something very historically resonant. He says, if you empty the land of its inhabitants, you'll be able to live there. If you don't empty the land of its inhabitants, you won't be able to live there. Namely, you can't live in Eretz Yisrael unless you empty the inhabitants. Now, in those days, there was a divine command to go to war with the inhabitants. Today, of course, the inhabitants have legitimate legal rights, and we can't just displace them, obviously, through violence or through manipulation. We have to try to recreate a Jewish presence through settlement, through purchasing, through land, through Jews returning, through creating a demographic spirit here that creates Judaism. But Rashi raises a fascinating question philosophically. Why is it so that HaKadosh Baruch Hu always has inhabitants in the land of Israel that we have to displace, either violently or in this case politically and financially? You'd think if this is God's land and he gifted it to the Jewish people, it should just be some empty terrain that's divine land that he gives to us and we march in when we deserve. If we don't deserve, we're expelled. Why is there this struggle to be in Eretz Yisrael, that we have to struggle with the current inhabitants? Why is it so? This word, v'horashtem, which according to the Ramban means to live, according to Rashi means to empty the land of the inhabitants, and then you'll be able to live there. But clearly Torah is telling us to live there by emptying the inhabitants. Why is it so? So evidently, okay, this is hard to know, but evidently what I think is as follows. I wrote it down before, I want to make sure I don't lose my page. You see my page? Right. Thank you. What I think is as follows. Our living in Eretz Yisrael isn't just geographic. This is Hashem's land. He wants us to live there. Obviously, it's historical. It's historical on two levels. Number one, because this is the land Hashem chose for us. This is the land under His Kisei HaKavod. If we're meant to have a supernatural role in history, we have to be landed. We have to be platformed in the right place. It's all a question of coordinates and alignment. But it's more than that. Jewish history is an attempt to rectify human history. When there are human ideas that come to the fore, come to the surface, that are wrong, that are faulty, that are dangerous, the Jewish people have to defeat them. That's why our history is the history of empires and history of nations. We're not a marginal nation. We don't. Our fight on Hanukkah was not with the Icelandians, it was the Greeks. And the Beis Hamikdash wasn't destroyed by some African tribe. It was destroyed by the Romans. And the interaction on Purim was not with some Chinese Ming dynasty or with Paras or Madai. All of our altercations and all of our interactions with the large empires of the world that are challenging humanity and pose certain challenges morally to humanity, and when we meet them and defeat them, we are repairing history by introducing important moral values, by defeating these empires that imperil moral values. That's true for our nationhood, but it's also true about Israel. There are people that live in Israel that represent these values, and by emptying the people from Eretz Israel, we're not just creating an empty terrain that we can live there, we're defeating the values at ground zero of history. So, for example, when we moved to Israel the first time, who lived in Israel? Idolaters, pagans. That was the time that we were struggling to introduce monotheism into the world. So the pagans of Israel distilled paganism and idolatry. And by emptying the land, we're not just emptying the land of inhabitants and preparing our apartment to live in, we're defeating paganism. So evicting or vacating the land of paganists is not just a territorial geographical challenge, it's also an intellectual, a theological process. Okay? And then and Bavel, when Bavel conquers the land, let me describe this a little bit differently. When Bavel conquers Eretz Yisrael, what does Bavel represent? Bavel is the first modern empire. Bavel is the first time that human beings try to conquer the entire world, not just their own region. It used to be regional. Sichon Melech Amori, Balak Melech Moav, Melche Midyan. Now you've got a superpower from the north. Ashur tried, he didn't succeed, but Bavel succeeds. And part of that succession of empires, he wants to conquer the land of Eretz Yisrael. He wants to take over the land of Eretz Yisrael and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. And by us defeating Bavel, essentially we're defeating the notion that human beings can establish long-lasting empires over other human beings. Hashem doesn't want human beings to live that way. Hashem wants human beings to live freely, not under the dominion of other empires. So we defeat Bavel, and at some time we defeat Rome as well. Rome occupies the entire... 200 years after the fall of Yerushalayim, the empire built to last 1,000 years falls, and Rome falls, and because the Jewish people stood up to Rome, and even though we failed in a rebellion, it emboldened other peoples to stand up to Rome. So all these moments when we come to Eretz Yisrael and there are inhabitants there, why does Hashem place inhabitants there? Why must we struggle with those inhabitants? Because our struggle to live in Israel isn't just about the struggle of land, it's about the struggle of ideas. And these ideas are represented by the local inhabitants, because this is ground zero for history. And when we struggle with those inhabitants and defeat those inhabitants, we're defeating the ideas that are dangerous. And now the big question becomes, in our current struggle, what are the ideas we're trying to defeat? It's hard to know until you go through it. I can describe the defeat of the local pagans. I can describe the defeat of Rome and of Babel and of Paris and Mandai. It's harder to describe the defeat of what ideas. I think there are two ideas. I think. It's hard to know because we're living through it. I think, first of all, in the modern era, nationalism is seen as something ugly and dangerous and ethnic and bigoted and should be multicultural and we all have the same DNA, because in part because of the horrors of Nazism and fascism. So people are traumatized by any suggestion of nationhood and unique ethnicity and unique national identity. And we're here, and this is a movement of nationalism to return to our land and our people, and that's why it's being opposed by so much of the BDS apartheid, whether they're just using BDS as a smokescreen or they really believe in it. Part of what they really are opposed to is this nationalism and the apartheid and how do you say it's your land and there are locals there, and this whole sense of a particular national identity. I think national identity is important, not just for Jews, but for the world. There's values in nationhood, there's values in shared past, and the multiculturalism and bleeding liberalism that tries to eliminate any national identity, I think it's dangerous for human identity, for human experience, for religion, for moral codes, for families. So I think that our return under a nationalist banner is trying to restore to humanity the sense of nationhood. And I think also that we're living in an environment that celebrates terror and the unholy alliance between terror and religion. Islamic fundamentalism and Islamic terror, not that all Islams, not all Muslims, but there's certainly a strain that's very dominant. Allah's angry or Allah's happy when people die, and it's a very violent religion. It always was a very violent religion. And that wedding between religion and violence is a corruption, is a distortion. And we're trying to return to this land and to defeat literally terror and to defeat that notion that religion should, both by defeating terror as well as providing a different view of religion. It's not just defeating terror militarily, providing a different view of what a Kaddish Baruch Hu is in this world. So it's hard to know because we're still through the process. But that's why there are inhabitants. They're not just inhabitants that we just... Why does Hashem subject us to this moral challenge? Look at all the challenges we have to face by living in Eretz Yisrael. Not just the military challenges, political challenges, moral challenges that we're trying to legally recover lands from people. Why doesn't Hashem make it easier for us? So part of it, he wants it to be difficult, so we'll appreciate it more. But, you know, that's a simplistic approach. So inhabitants represent ideas. And the ideas have to be defeated when they impel humanity. So three very interesting Rashis. Rashi number one, why does the land fall? Okay, the land falls because we don't acquire it cognitively. The land falls because states around Israel fall when they... And by the way, and states that try to help Israel don't fall. So I mentioned Persia before, Paras and Mandai. Paras and Mandai had a very long-lasting empire. The empire lasted 1,500 years. Or at least 1,000 or 1,200. Why?
because they helped Israel, because they built the Beis HaMikdash. Because Koresh builds the Beis HaMikdash. So Nebuchadnezzar destroys the Beis HaMikdash, and his empire that was overwhelming disintegrates in a week. Empire of Samandai, they support the Beis HaMikdash, and their empire expands. Greece rises to power right around the time that Alexander the Great visits Yerushalayim and is kind to the Jews and doesn't destroy Yerushalayim. That's the height of the Greek Empire. And then not. And then 100 years later, Greece and Jerusalem start to war, and then Greece falls. And then Rome destroys the Beis HaMikdash, and then 200 years afterwards falls, around 354. So it's not just that if you live in the vicinity, you fall. You fall if you try to stand in the way of history. If you're on the right side of history, then your empire is pretty successful. So the rise and fall is connoted by the teepul. The second part is these are the boundaries of Israel for halachic purposes, for Shulchan Aruch, not necessarily for historical purposes. And then finally, why are there inhabitants? Why when the Torah, this is the parsha describing living in Eretz Yisrael. We can have a halachic debate whether there's a mitzvah or not, but it's clear even according to the Rambam, the Torah uses a strange language to describe the mitzvah. And Rashi picks that up and says it's a language that implies eliminating the inhabitants. I don't mean eliminating, killing them, but displacing them. So in the days of the Torah, it's by war. Today, it's by natural, legal, diplomatic means. But why? It's so morally challenging. The answer is because Israel is not just a geographical drama. It's a theological, intellectual drama. Inhabitants in Israel are in ground zero. They represent human values, challenges to humanity. In the days of Moshe, it was paganism. In the days of the Jewish return in Ezra, it was the concept of empires to control other human beings' fates, multi-regional empires. And today, it seems to be national identity, good and evil, terror, possibly some other ideas. And therefore, we have to struggle with the people because we represent the counterbalance to some of those dangerous values. Shabbat shalom.